Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to this episode of Game Cabinet. Today we're sliding open the door and reaching in for a handful of games. Multimedia tied in games. Things that are like the Hellboy game, the Dark Souls game, one of George's and I's favorite games to talk about, Tack, the Umbrella Academy game. There's so many games nowadays that media outside of gaming is starting to affect, and vice versa, where gaming is starting to affect the outside world itself, such as Ticket to Ride getting a virtual skin, Pandemic getting a virtual skin. A lot of these kind of basic intro games starting to really get out there that aren't your, oh, well, I guess if we want to play a board game online, we're going to play Monopoly. You know, we're starting to get a little bit more. We've gotten to the point of things like Tabletop Simulator, where people are starting to go out of their way to create these magnificent programs so that we can play our games in a more spread out and reachable fan basis, essentially.
Yeah.
But I know that George and I have played at least together a handful of these kind of games. I think my favorite most recent one, though, has been the Umbrella Academy game.
Yeah.
It is, they've got a wonderful like 15-minute video online on how to like play, and it really is. You watch that video and you're like, oh, cool. This is how the game goes. Like, we're ready to rock and roll.
Nice.
We've been playing it off and on at the house right now, and it's been an absolute blast the way that they've really encapsulated the show and the comic book, like both into an actual like playable game where you feel like a dysfunctional family trying to fight crime.
Nice.
You know, what are some of your favorite ones that you've had there, George?
So, I mean, yeah, it's an interesting topic because it goes, like, way, way across the whole spectrum of board games as far as, like, style and, you know, how they implement the theme of whatever property that they're basing it on and making it into a board game that you play around a table with other people. But if I had to name a favorite, I mean, I'm partial for sure, but Hellboy is definitely one of them right up there at the top as far as, like, fun game that also makes you feel like you're one of those BPRD agents or Hellboy or whoever. Like, yeah, investigating this occult thing and then fighting a big bad guy at the end. Like, it's like a classic Hellboy comic book in a game.
Yeah, with our duo that we played in, I played, what, Roger? I think you played Hellboy?
Probably,
I don't remember if you did decide to go with him.
He's a little on the strong side.
But it really did feel like we did The Plague of Frogs, which I've read through, and it felt like how I felt when I read that book. Mm-hmm, like the slow crawling through the mysterious house and then these random creatures appearing coming at us. I was like, this is really a weird sensation, but I like it.
And it's funny with certain games, they pull off the ability to kind of shift the style and the execution. In specifically in the example of Hellboy, you can basically scale the difficulty up and down by choosing weaker people, like you just normal human beings. Like, you can just go in with a little squad of dudes from the BPRD and it makes it way harder because you're not Hellboy or Roger the Homunculus or or Liz, who's, you know, got the pyrokinetics and stuff. So you can actually just scale down and feel like you're one of those dudes who's kind of a red shirt just going into a spooky house, probably not going to survive as easily.
Yeah, but that's where I had had the idea of wanting to run a BPRD game because I'd seen some minis that came out after just reading The Plague of Frogs that looked pretty similar. And that was the first, like, oh, okay, you can do this right. Like, I'm going to have to take some time to do it, but, like, we really could do this very well, and it's not going to be as crazy as I thought. Like, I thought it was going to, if I tried it, that it was going to come out super whack and it wasn't going to be fun. But I was like, okay, there is a way to have to convey the feeling I want to convey. I just got to see how these, like, study how these guys kind of did it and then bring it to an RPG style level instead. Okay, cool. And that's where I really appreciated it, because who doesn't want to play in their favorite, you know, comic book universe or video game universe into an RPG or into a tabletop? One that I really want to get my hands on and still haven't is the Horizon Zero Dawn game.
Oh, that looks so good.
It does.
I love that game. It's so much fun, how they really utilize, like, the bow versus all these mechanical creatures.
Mm-hmm.
I really want to see, like, how they implement some of the stuff into a board game. Like, they're like, especially the T-Rex, there are so many pieces that you can shoot off of it. Then after shooting off half the pieces, you can turn around and use it on the creature.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to see how they kind of try to bring that into a board game state.
Yeah.
Like, how do you have random drops mid-combat?
It'd be interesting to see.
Like being in an RPG, you know, oh, you killed that guy. There's still four more left. Okay, well, while you guys defend me, I'm going to go ahead and loot this body real quick and give it a pat down and see if I can find what we're looking for. How do in board game?
Right.
Like, yeah, no, that's one that I definitely, when the day comes that you pick that up, let me know. We can play.
Oh, dude, for sure. I'm hoping next year to have a good long buy session and then a good long play sessions of some new goodies.
That'd be nice.
One that I actually, it's funny because it actually fits very perfectly into the kind of a niche direction of what our topic is today. But I just tried, for the first time, Dungeons & Dragons, the adventure system game. The one, they have a line of board games which are
Dungeons
& Dragons board games. The one that I played was The Legend of Drizzt.
Yeah, how was that?
It was fun. I mean, it's definitely, it helps onboard somebody into the world of Dungeons & Dragons and or like a dungeon crawl style board game with admittedly some very simple and easy to follow rules to get set up and learn how to play the game. Mark and I, who were the two playing it, started with their little like learn to play scenario, got about halfway through, kind of got the gist of the rules, and then started with the second scenario, which is like the first full group thing that you can do. And it's honestly, I highly recommend it to somebody that's kind of likes Dungeons and Dragons as an idea, but maybe doesn't want to jump all the way into the game, like the actual pen and paper kind of game. Because it does, I mean, you know, you have Drizzt, Dwarden, you have Brunor. You have like Wolfgar.
It's experience.
Yeah. He's the main cast of characters that's in that version. And it's funny because I kept thinking, yet again, another, you know, multimedia crossing over thing. But like half of the characters that we saw, or even the monsters, were made into the new Forgotten Realms Magic the Gathering set too.
Yeah.
And so they have this really, really nice, like across the board, like product recognizability, I guess, so that like if you've played that one random board game version and you jump over to, you know, explore some more of the lore in a different direction, they have it so that you kind of are familiar with what you're looking at.
Yeah, and I mean, what, a month ago or so, D&D also influenced one of the other biggest markets out there for us, video games. Like, they just dropped their Dark Alliance video game.
Oh,
they're
nice.
Supposed to be having, I think Baldur's Gate's supposed to come out around holiday season this year.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's the year of D&D this year, that's for sure. Like, everybody's kind of got their piece of that pie, and they're making their money on that, and I'm not sad about it. I'm a little sad about Dark Alliance, but it's besides the point.
Well, then there was also, you know, in years past, the before times.
Oh, before it was cool to be a nerd?
No, not quite that far. I'm talking like 3 years.
Oh, all right.
Three years. Rick and Morty did a D&D.
Yeah.
And Stranger Things did a D&D.
I wish we could still get that one in.
Oh, I know, right?
That little Demigorgon was adorable.
Yep.
So cute. But these were TV shows that really, like, yeah, they hit on D&D as topics on their show, but it's just another way that media has influenced D&D. Hey, people really like Rick and Morty. Let's make a Rick and Morty D&D.
Yeah.
I may have bought that fancy deluxe edition of the comic books that they did, which are straight up a D&D and Rick and Morty crossover.
It's
so good.
That Patrick Rothfuss, among a few other writers, actually helped write, which is just amazing because we could not possibly tie him to a desk to keep writing his third book, but at least he did write a little Rick and Morty D&D crossover, you know? If we got to take something where we can get it, that's not a bad thing to have to take.
Well, and speaking of Mr. Rothfuss influencing gaming culture, we have Tack, which is in and of itself, it's absolutely its own game,
mm-hmm.
but it was created by Patrick Rothfuss and his book.
And it's not like a book series like Warhammer.
Right.
Like Warhammer spread it from this board game, made some novels because they were like, oh, we got this cool thing, which don't get me wrong, that's really cool that they decided to get this whole novelized universe going. But now when we see something like Twilight Imperium or like Black Reach or mm-hmm. any of those kind of things, it's a little less of a shock because they already produce games. So it's kind of cool to see a game get produced off of a book that really had no ties to gaming beforehand.
Yeah.
Like other than Rothfuss does like Acquisitions Inc. and stuff. But I mean,
sure.
he's not
making and producing games. He's playing a game and doing
TAC wasn't something like Acquisitions Inc. that got put into the D&D universe. TAC was its own game built from the bones up.
Yeah.
Like, it takes elements of typical board strategy games, but it is its entirely own game.
Well, and the fact that you can get the... If your book is so good and the game in it's already so well thought up of that, like, a gaming legend like, I don't know, James Ernst, who's been around for forever, is like, hey, I like your book, and this is a really interesting, like, idea for a game. We should make that for people. That's nutty. That dude makes so many of his own personal IPs that he's like, no, this is mine. I own all of this. And he's like, no, I want to make something with you because I liked your stuff. I want to make something with you because I really liked your stuff.
Right.
You know, it's a pretty cool, weird thing to have happen for a board game and book.
I was beaten by James Ernst in a very quick game of TAC once upon a time. In person, we actually got I got to play one game of TAC with James Ernst.
That's amazing.
And then when he beat me, he handed me a little fancy little capstone just for fun. He was like, here you go, here's your consolation prize. He made the game, you know. He's probably going to beat most of the people he sits down with.
Yeah, that he's probably has to have a great idea of it, because I mean, I like to watch the video of Patrick Rothfuss and his, I think it's his assistant. I don't know. I don't remember what the relationship between them is, but he and her sit down and play TAC. And it's really fun to watch them because it's like during the beta versions of TAC.
Oh, nice.
But because she knows all of his references as well as he does almost, you can see them like just slide right into like they've been playing it for years though. They're like, okay, this is like this. I need to go over here. Oh, this needs to happen. And you're like, this is technically a beta form of game. And they're like, nope, we've been doing this for forever now.
Yeah.
Well, and it's cool with a game like TAC specifically because they very strictly don't actually say any of the rules in the book. Like, they just left it vague and like, hey, you know, like they kind of imply a couple of like ways, like they mention like the names of certain strategies and things like that,
yeah.
But they don't really describe them. But then they reverse engineered a game that if you go back and read the parts of the book where they actually talk about it, it makes sense.
Yeah, you can totally see how this game functioned and like played out. Like, after playing TAC a bunch, I went back and re-listened to Wise Man's Fear, and then going back and hearing them play and like how they're talking about it. The first time I pictured something significantly more like Go, the Avatar style checkers and chess that they did with the Lotus tiles and stuff. Or Pai Gao, I think that's what that's called, I think.
Pai Shao.
Thank you. But I expected something far more like that. But then seeing TAC put together and then going back and listening to it, I can 100% see it be like, okay, yeah, no, this is why that would give me that kind of a feel. But now I like knowing how it functions, I can see those slight more subtleties to the strategies he was mentioning. Mm-hmm. Like, I was like, okay, this is kind of cool. Like, I'm now learning something from listening to my book. This is pretty neat.
Yeah. And it's such a specifically small part of that book, too. It's like 10 chapters, he's in this one place, and then he moves on, and it's like, okay.
But hey.
And then they never really reference TAC again.
They don't. It's funny.
It's like, it's just gone. It doesn't become a thing that he suggests that. I mean, there's a good chunk of that book where he's stuck in another area with like one person, and he could have totally been like, hey, here's this game I learned. We can at least use this to like blow past some time. And nope, no mention of it, nothing like that. Just right on with the day.
He was kind of busy.
But I mean, there's downtime.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, but who just carries a TAC board around in their back pocket?
You don't need one. That's part of why that game is so magnificently wonderful.
It's true.
You take two colors of leaves and two colors of rock. You could probably figure it out, like, and be able to actually play and go and move around and play a game of TAC.
So just on the off chance that there are, you know, any of you dear listeners that are looking for the right little foothold into board gaming to maybe see about, you know, getting your foot in the door as far as stuff goes, there's just a handful of other properties that you could kind of look for in board gaming would be, they have Dune is a very popular one these days. There's Old old version of it and a newer version of it that's been wildly popular lately. There's obviously, like we mentioned, there's Rick and Morty, and there's a whole slew of games out there that are related to Rick and Morty.
There's Pickle Rick.
We have it downstairs right now. It's a little cat and mouse game where you play as either Pickle Rick or, the Jaguar guy. The one in the Pickle Rick episode that he's like having the assassin duel with. So it's just like so many fun little ways to get your foot in the door. Video game wise, there's also a Bloodborne game out there as well as a card game. Same deal with Dark Souls. There's the board game and card game, which are very punishing. And if you
understand what Dark Souls is,
correct.
This game is Dark Souls. It makes you feel like Dark Souls and you will cry like Dark Souls. Congratulations. Have fun.
Yep.
With that said, you know, my love of it.
And just in case it wasn't clear to anybody from other episodes we've done, there's a tiny little indie property called Star Wars that has a lot of games involved, too.
That's something real obscure.
Yeah. You might not have heard of it, but there's lots of games out there for it, surprisingly.
They put out a few movies, like,
I think so.
10 years ago or so, that.
Yeah,
like,
the continuity's really weird on it.
Yeah, they
put
out, like, one... No, I thought that they put out, like, 1, 2, and 3, and then, like, they suddenly skipped to, like, 9, 7, and 10.
Something like that.
But
also, on the other end of the sci-fi genre, there's also a lot of Star Trek games.
Indeed. Yeah. If you...
I like my science.
Take a quick moment to shout out the Star Trek game Ascendancy, which is an amazingly fun game if you have exactly three people to play it. So with that quote, any of you three-person gaming groups out there, and if you like Star Trek, you should give Ascendancy a shot. It's delightful. I think you can add to play with more than three, but if you just have the main box, you need three people.
That's really weird.
It is. It's great.
It's really, really weird. Yeah. And then there's also, let's just mention Flux. You know, they mix in all kinds of properties.
Doctor Who.
Yeah. Mighty Python.
Monty Python.
Thank you.
You're good.
I knew exactly what you meant, and I was like, yeah. I'm just going with it, Mighty Python.
Don't do that. Correct me.
You said it with such confidence that for a second I questioned my own sanity.
I do that. Just ignore me and be like, no, you're wrong. This is how it's said. And I'll be like, oh, yeah, probably.
Drew's secretly just gaslighting everybody all the time.
All the time. It's not on purpose. I don't mean it. Tell me I'm wrong. It's okay. But they've got, I think they have a Star Trek and Star Wars one. They've got all sorts of other silly ones that have... Gloom is kind of a ripoff of, not a bad ripoff, but a ripoff of kind of Adam's Family.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
And
absolutely.
If anybody's looking for a really solid little card game,
Gloom is amazing.
Gloom is kind of where it's at.
Well, and then they even, within Gloom, they have a Cthulhu version, they have a Game of Thrones version, they have a space version, a fairy tale version. Like, they have all sorts of crazy different little nuances, kind of like Flux does.
Yeah,
it's kind of heading in that direction with all the different things.
Munchkin.
Yes.
Munchkin is another one that has a lot of...
Marvel. Oh my goodness. Now that we're getting more and more of these IPs that we're thinking of, I'm like, oh, you know, like Codenames has a bunch of flavors.
Yep.
There's a bunch of Harry Potter themed stuff. Like, honestly,
heard the card game for that's dope.
Yes, I've heard such good things about that card game, the Battle at Hogwarts card game.
Yeah.
It's super good.
When I was down at the board game retailer convention, I saw somebody do like literally a full hour-long panel on running a rental, like a game rental system, which is a thought that has occurred to me. Well, you know, pandemic and things, it makes it a little more challenging to rent out games and do stuff like that. But anyways, neither here nor there. The entire panel that this guy did to explain how to kind of curate a rental system was based around the use of the Harry Potter deck building game and how popular it was to get people in the door and coming back and playing more games.
Cool.
So it's just in general, like, yes, weird tangent. Sorry.
Pretty much any fandom that you are part of, someone has a game based on that fandom.
Yeah.
Like, even we talked about Digimon last time.
Yeah. Cartoon coming card game.
Like, mm-hmm. Digimon started out as little Tamagotchi-like creatures, and then they got turned into a TV series.
Yeah, and now they're taking over the world with all their crazy cool... Dude, think about watches now, where it's like the old Tamagotchis, but you load them up onto, like, SD cards, so you can change them into whatever watch you want, or change out whatever Digimon you're currently working on.
So great.
Awesome. It's really cool. I'm super jelly.
Ooh, I feel very much on point with our topic today. And by the time you listen to this, the Kickstarter will be done. But today, on this particular day that we are recording, we will be backing the Avatar The Last Airbender role-playing game Kickstarter.
I'm so excited.
And we should have enough to go around. So if that's something that, you know, you got the FOMO and don't want to miss out, let us know. We can get your contact information and, you know, it's Kickstarter, so give us time. If you've listened to one of our previous recent episodes about Kickstarter, you know that the time frame ends up stretching a little bit.
It can be a little long.
I'm really bummed. I don't think I'm going to get to kickstart that as heavily as I would like to.
Yeah, there is an all-in pledge that if you're listening, you can look it up and see what it is, but we will be getting the core books and then pretty much any of the, you know, extras and little bits and bobs and things that we can get our grubby little mitts on.
I think we're essentially getting the $50 pack, and that the only thing that doesn't come with is the like holographic covers and stuff like that.
I think that sounds about right. It's something about cabbages pledge level.
Yeah.
It's the retailer.
It's a special retailer one. I saw that and was like, oh, what about my cat? Oh, retailer. Okay. We're getting that for the store that I don't have to worry about.
Yep.
I'm hoping to at least back their like low end one because it's like $12 and you get everything digitally.
Oh, sweet.
But for like $75, you get all the cool stuff that isn't their stupid, expensive $100 metal dice set that's absolutely gorgeous, but I don't know if I would spend $100 on dice like that on any cross-property. But yeah, I'm so excited about it. I've been reading the overview more and more. Like on my breaks, I'm reading the overview, and I think I'm almost ready to run like a little one-shot of it.
Nice.
It does give you like... Just enough.
Nice.
To possibly do one. Although I'm worried about the... But what about this? How does this function? I don't know. We have half the... rules.
This is demo mode. You don't have access to that.
Yeah, don't worry about it.
You can't do that. You don't have access to it yet. You haven't unlocked that content.
I might.
EA Games has that as a buyable download.
Just like Battlefield. It's funny because it's true.
It's funny. It's a good joke. It's a great joke. I'm gonna need you to stop.
My brain broke.
One that I'm still excited to try at some point that you and I both own is the Witcher RPG.
Yeah. I'm ready.
I know.
Like, you just say the word, dude. We can make a small little group up. Kel is ready.
Nice.
And Katie's ready. Like, nice. Both of them essentially. Because,
yeah, that's one that came from a book, became a video game, became a really popular TV series.
That helps make the books make sense almost, which is a very rare phenomenon.
Yes. And they made an RPG about it. And so, if you're a Witcher fan, highly recommend. I've read through the rule book. It's great.
It's so cool. I normally don't like games where you get into really weirdly big numbers. Mm-hmm. Like, I like Pathfinder because the big numbers do happen, but it's more for like your skill checks and things like that. But the way that you have attack skills and defensive skills that you just add so much to, it's nutty. And I'm becoming a bigger and bigger fan of it the more I read about it. I'm not a huge fan of their magic system.
Yeah, but the magic system in The Witcher, it was never...
It's a little too DCC for me.
Yeah.
Like, kind of how that, like, depending on how you roll depends on what kind of effect you're going to get. And that's cool, but some of the spell's baseline effects aren't the best. And I think that they should be a little more geared towards what they sound like that you should be
fair.
Expecting.
That's fair.
Like, that's the only thing. I think it's cool to have a tier system but your baseline even, okay, you didn't roll that great, but you essentially passed, should be the most basic of what you would think of when hearing that spell's name.
Yeah.
And that doesn't always happen with those, but I still like it.
Yeah.
It's still one that I'm like, I will forgive your things because I like your everything else. Their medical system's super cool. Like, yeah. All right, well, at some point, we're going to have an entire episode where we talk about The Witcher RPG because it's got so much crazy, cool nuttiness to it that I think that you'd really get into it too, George. We've talked enough about like alchemy and stuff like that I think that you'd find some of their cool like crafting processes to be fun and unique.
That's one of the things I liked the most about the video games, was that you really are rewarded for looking into the alchemy end of things so that you can give yourself all those crazy like combat buffs and things like
that. Oh, yeah, and build your alchemy tree and stuff like that,
Right.
Yeah, and there's all sorts of things like that, and they like actually get to show you the side of alchemy that isn't also just necessarily the Witcher side of it, where it's like, oh, yeah, if you take this as a human, you're gonna die. They're like, no, here's how to like make some basic what they'd call health potions. Like,
here's what the humans would consider health potions, not swallow, which will kill you.
Yeah, here's what we would consider cat's eye. It essentially just, you know, it's not as effective as these crazy potions that they're using, but, you know, with these herbs, it essentially lets the blood flow better to your eyes, and it allows your eyes to absorb the light better, some crazy explanation. And that's just really cool that they thought of this double layer of like, how do we give this to a human without killing them? Okay, well, we obviously have to make it less potent to start with, but how else do we do that, you know?
God, we probably could. I mean, because even though I haven't read the book of the RPG, I'm like tempted to like start talking about other Witcher stuff,
but... I know, right?
But yeah, it's the creatures make sense. Like, you see like all the different little creature bits and stuff. They did a really good job with the lore and like bringing it over and extracting from both the video game and the book and bringing it into that tabletop. It looks so much fun. It looks so much fun, and the scope of it is crazy. Like, you can be as widely spread as you want or as closed in as you want. I've seen people doing one shots. I've seen some really cool like ideas on how to do a campaign, like doing campaigns for it and making it kind of like the video game, where it's like, okay, you roll into town, here's the bounty board, we add these to your quests booklet essentially, and this is your main quest, these are all your side quests, we finish a quest per one shot essentially, and then before we start the next one, you guys tell me what quest you're going to do next. Like, pick a bounty or pick a town that you want to go to and look at some of the bounties around there, so I can just prep in that direction. And but they keep this crazy open sandbox, and I'm like, that's all thanks to this crazy wonderful world that some dude built and now we get to play in.
I would try and say his name, but I cannot say his name.
I was thinking exactly the same thing. Starts with S-A-P.
Yeah, and
I think it's supposed to be Sapinski.
Sapinski.
I've listened to a lot of interviews. I don't know if they're saying it wrong, but I'm pretty sure that that's how people have been pronouncing it.
I'm terrible at names.
If I butchered his name, I'm sorry. I doubt he's listening to me, though, so... if he is, cool. Dude, come sign some books. Come talk with us.
We love your books so much.
Yeah, you're welcome to come and talk with us anytime. Really, anytime. Yeah, that's one of those crazy IPs that manages to make its way over. I mean, Rugrats has an entire game out about itself.
Yeah, it does.
Which is really fun.
Yeah, no, not only that, they have an entire Nickelodeon crossover, which is basically a food fight between all the characters involved, and then if you really want it, you can get a little Reptar miniature to be an expansion,
which I
literally bought that expansion without owning the base game so that I could have the Reptar miniature.
I mean, but why wouldn't you, though?
They don't put out enough Reptar stuff.
I am the target market. it is me. That's okay.
It's fair.
I accept my fate.
I love the trend that we're in where being a nerd is cool now.
Yeah.
So all of the things that like nerddom had when I was growing up that were so hard to find are now just everywhere. It's just everywhere. And it's so great to me to just be able to go anywhere and be like, oh, I'm part of that fandom. I'm part of that fandom. You don't have to hunt. You don't have to make your own stuff. You can literally just go anywhere.
Yeah. You can still find some really cool third-party design stuff.
Oh, 100%.
But at the same time, I wasn't a big fan of Funko for a really long time. But then they started making things that I was like, oh, you don't find stuff for that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Darkwing Duck is my big go-to on that one. Like, you don't find good... Like, if I want a Darkwing Duck plush, I'm going to have to find somebody who makes plushes. Maybe somebody who already had the idea to make one and is willing to sell it off.
Right.
I would totally play a Darkwing Duck board game.
Right! Oh, my God.
Why don't they have a Darkwing Duck board game?
Subtitle, Let's Get Dangerous.
Let's Get Dangerous.
Oh, yeah.
That should exist.
Why... doesn't it?
Probably coming to a Kickstarter near you.
Or,
I mean, at some point, you know.
I would also play a DuckTales board game. Where you could just be Huey, Dewey, and Louie and, like, go on adventures.
Like, go on all the crazy little expeditions with Uncle Scrooge.
Yeah.
And you have to, like, essentially play the episode to get out.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be pretty 100%.
Fun. 100%.
Why haven't they done that? Dude, how have they not done a legacy edition of Darkwing Duck? That's exactly it right there. Legacy, Let's Get Dangerous edition, Darkwing Duck.
I'm just gonna blame the mouse.
We can't. Oh, no, we can. Because I think they came up with their Marvel one before Marvel was part of Disney. So, And I can't think of any Disney IPs that Legend does.
Oh, God. Speaking of properties that you might want to be able to get into, there are uncountable amounts of Marvel games out there. If that's your jam, there are so many.
Yeah.
And so many games have a Marvel flavor to them also. Like, Monopoly has a Marvel Monopoly.
Splendor. Legendary started as a Marvel game, but that's a great card game.
Munchkin, yeah. Flux.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Code names.
There's a 5-minute dungeon version of itself called 5-Minute Marvel. There's a miniatures game called, there's a card game these days called Champions, but then there's a miniatures game called Crisis Protocol. We could just keep going on and on, I promise.
And then there's also Marvel Champions, and then there's...
Marvel Legends,
and then what's the other one that they just... Villainous.
Oh,
Marvel Villainous.
Right, yep, I knew there was another crossover one.
That was the one I was trying to think of.
Yep. So yeah.
The DC game. That was the other one. The DC deck builder. That might not be Marvel, but like as far as comic book spreads go, like
that's a great game.
There's a comic book spread for everything now.
Yeah,
and Villainous is a great one too if you're a fan of Disney.
Right.
Like that game is super solid and there's so many expansions.
Right. And you get to play as the bad guys.
And you get to be the bad guys. I love games where you get to be the bad guy.
Right. Here's a helpful hint for any of you who are actually out there listening. Apparently Maleficent is OP. So here's your good homework for the week. Play her, stomp your friends, and have fun.
I mean, she can turn into a dragon.
It's true.
I feel like she's just OP as a character anyway.
I don't disagree with her idea to make it, but apparently it is blatantly obvious.
Obvious. Somebody was like, I really like Maleficent. I really like her.
Nobody else is going to stop me from doing this?
Okay.
It's making its way to final publishing. All right. Well. We'll see how that plays out.
I'm trying to think if there were any others that I had on my list that were...
Almost all the ones that I have are just things that have been turned into RPGs.
Yeah.
Because...
There's a lot of those.
Because people are realizing we want to play in our favorite worlds.
Well, there's Doctor Who RPGs.
Firefly
RPGs. I think Supernatural has an RPG.
Yes, it does.
There's, if you just like the genre, there's literally an RPG called Kids on Bikes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Like, it's a good one.
Yeah. And not only that, there are other ones that also do it too. Like Tales from the Loop is one. Pick a genre. There is a role-playing game for
I'm
that
pretty
genre.
Sure there's a Marvel RPG out there and a DC RPG.
Yep.
There's one just called Superheroes. Heroes, sorry.
Everybody should know by now that I'm a big Dragon Age fan. There's a Dragon Age RPG out there.
Yeah. I think one of the other... Oh, what was it? I know there was another cool... I mean... A good example of RPGs infecting the rest of the world, Cyberpunk.
Mm-hmm. Cyberpunk!
We actually, that got brought up this morning in my house, Cyberpunk 2077.
So this episode's
not in a good flavor.
This episode's about media influencing gaming, like non-board game, tabletop game stuff changing into games.
Yeah.
But Cyberpunk is the opposite.
Yeah.
Which is super cool to me.
Yeah,
like, they took a game and they were like, hey, and now it's a video game.
Yeah, and now it's a video game. It's getting a lot more, like, books are starting to come out with it. Like, people had always done that feel, like, Pawn Smith Strait says that he took a lot of inspiration from, like, Technomancer and books of that era and that style. And it was cool that we had, like, those books and people did things that were kind of similar. But now that he's really gone back... Republished his rules, given a good solid like home base city to it again, and with the video game coming out and having that kind of help bring in a solid pinpoint for people that weren't necessarily into Cyberpunk to begin with, can now start reading all these cool like novels about, you know, I think that they put out a book about Night City's gang, the Pacifica gang.
Oh,
and so Yeah, Pondsmith likes to also be a little bit controversial, just a little bit.
Well, and didn't
the game he got the most flack for?
Didn't Shadowrun also start out as an RPG that turned into a video game?
Yeah, they did a video game that wasn't bad.
I mean, it was old, so you know.
I played it like when it first came out back in the day. Like it was it was really fun. Their only problem, in my opinion, was the fact that they didn't focus on finding kind of a campaign storyline to drive it through, even if it would have still been that kind of one-off matchy style that they did, because that's kind of how Titanfall did it, was going through the storyline, you kind of went through multiplayer matches, and that helped define your storyline. And that's fine, but they didn't do that very well, and they didn't let you play solo enough well. But it was wonderful online. There were crazy things that happened in that game that, to this day, some of my favorite plays that I've seen in first-person shooters happened in that game. And it's all because of a tiny little RPG.
Which is no longer super tiny.
No, it's ridiculously massive. The core book for that thing's ridiculous.
I don't know. I think that popular culture influencing gaming was only, like, it was only a matter of time for games to get out of, like, kind of the base Hasbro, Sorry, Aggravation, Monopoly, the games that were big when I was growing up.
Yeah.
And then popular culture came in and everyone was like, oh, but what if we made games?
Yeah.
What if we did this instead?
Yeah. Why don't we just license this property and let them skin it up and money for everybody?
Money for everyone. I think Monopoly was one of the first people to really jump on that.
They understood that wagon real quick, real fast.
There's like 800 different types of Monopoly you can buy.
But that's why I like games like Flux and even kind of Tiny Epics, because they might not have necessarily a specific thing that they go after usually, but they hit up the themes of things really well, like Western, you know, tactics, fantasy tactics, and the mech one. Things like that, they really sum up those feels, and then Flux having all of its ways to try to bring people into the fold. Come into our grubby midst, you'll never leave our table again.
Flux is so much fun.
It is. Flux is so good.
I love Flux because it always feels like you're playing Flux, but it also feels like such like a different game with each theme.
Yeah.
Because you're still playing Flux, but all the cards are different.
Yeah.
Yep.
The rules might stay the same, but the rest of the content's going to change on you, which is really nice. Indeed. But do we got any final thoughts here on our media mashing with our games and our games mashing into our media?
I guess if you were ever hesitant to get into playing board games and all this stuff sounds cool, but you know, you don't know where to start, just pick something you like. Honestly, like, it's everybody has their first, you know, like, new experience with board games, or if it's been a long time and you haven't, or whatever it is, like, there's YouTube is your friend, and so are podcasts like us, but also YouTube is your friend. They'll have a video to explain how to play the rules of almost any game you could hope for,
except for Crossmaster's Quest.
Except for that one that Drew very specifically just brought up. So I'm sorry if that's the one you're looking for.
No, I traded that game back in. Somebody bought it. I ask him every time I see him if he's played it, and he goes, no. The rules don't make enough sense. And I'm like, you're going to bring it back in for trade? No. He's just decided that it's going to rot on his shelf. And I was like, good on ya, giving it at least a home to live.
But, I'm sure the percentage of people that listen to this that haven't, you know, gotten their, you know, at least their feet wet with board games is probably pretty small, but don't let, you know, the vast and crazy world of board gaming intimidate you too much, because everybody starts somewhere.
Yeah.
We get a lot of people that walk the board game aisle that are just like, oh my God, I don't even know, like, there's so many games, how do I even pick? And really, just pick one.
Yeah. Ask your LGS people.
Yeah.
Like, when they come by and they say, hey, is there anything I can help you find? Ask them, hey, do you do the games? Like, do you play games?
Do you have a recommendation?
Any suggestions? Like,
yeah. So, even I don't play a ton of games, but if you ask me for a recommendation, I can recommend you some games that I think are fun.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like,
almost every local game store person is going to have at least two or three games that they know they enjoy and might be able to at least start setting you on the right path. I haven't played every board game, but if I show you one and you're like, oh, this looks interesting. All right, well, if that's not quite what you're looking for, but that looks interesting, I haven't played this one, but it sounds like it's more what you're looking for out of that other
game.
Yeah, you know? And I mean, your local game store, people talk to each other. I haven't played Dark Souls, but if somebody says, hey, I really liked the Dark Souls board game, what can you recommend for me? I could recommend you a few games based on what I've talked to Drew and George about. Like, hey, my buddy really likes this game. These are some other games that he really likes.
Yeah.
Because of this game. Try it.
Absolutely. Oh, tiny last little note. There are going to be some situations that we just straight up can't help with, unfortunately. The one that comes to mind more recently is the Stardew Valley board game. That has not made it through any retail distribution. Sometimes there's going to be games like that that you just have to buy from the people that are making it online from their own store.
We'll be upfront with you about that.
Yeah,
though.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. And if we have that information, we will be very clear about it and not, you know, try and get your hopes up. But there are some weird little corner cases like that, just throwing that out there too.
Well, and there's some games like Wingspan that... we only can get in every 6 months.
Yep.
We get as many as we can, and then after 6 months, we're like, sorry, we can't order more.
Right.
Wish we could. Come back in a half a year. Talk to us again. Okay, hey, thanks, bye.
If that was you 6 months ago, we are currently in that next half of the year. We have some on the shelf.
I know, I'm so excited. Yeah, I saw those now. The other just day, and I was like, look, Wingspan!
Right?
I'm so excited every time I see it.
We should just make an alert on our games page for Wingspan.
Right?
Oh, Wingspan's in. Just put it on the page for now. Oh, it's gone.
Have
kill
a sign
it.
A sign on the door. If the bird is flapping its wings, that means Wingspan is in stock. If it's perched,
I actually can on the game really cabinet good. Page add a heading to where if Wingspan is in stock, it'll show up on the sidebar, and if it's out of stock, it will not show up on the sidebar.
You should just put that one on our game cabinet page.
Because
that one's going to be one people are going to ask about for forever.
If you ever want to know if we have Wingspan in stock, please go to Adventures Underground website and check our game cabinet page. It'll be on there. I'm going to put it on there today.
Nice. Good stuff.
For all of you who have to cross your fingers and hope for 6 months out of the year.
We also can ship.
Yeah. Look at this one being on point with that.
I'm like, I can send you stuff. I'm in charge of that.
See? You got the right person here. Well, with those little last minute thoughts, I think that's where we're going to go ahead and shove this bundle of games back into the closet, slam shut that door, and we'll catch you guys next time.
You've been listening to The Game Cabinet at the AU Radio Podcast Network. If you're interested in any of the titles from today's episode, you can check out the link tree in the description to visit Adventures Underground at their online store to browse the selections or inquire about special orders. If you'd like to contact the show, you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Just check out that link tree in the description. Or you can email the show at podcast@advunderground.com. You can also support this show and all the awesome shows on AU Radio that you love by becoming a patron of the AU Radio Podcast Network. You can find us at patreon.com/ADV Underground. For as little as $1 a month, you can help us continue to create these shows, and soon, many more.
You've been listening to the AU Radio Podcast Network. Music is provided by CubbyPurplePlanet.com and BenSound.com. Views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of Adventures Underground. AU Radio is a production of Adventures Underground, copyright 2018, all rights reserved.